This episode is brought in part to you by Audible, your go-to destination for thrilling audio entertainment. Whether you're looking for a hair-raising experience to enjoy while you're on the move or eager to dive into sinister and shocking tales, Audible has an exclusive collection of thrillers from best-selling authors that will keep you on the edge of your seat. Like James Patterson's first audio-only thriller, The Coldest Case. Experience stories like never before, where every chilling detail is brought to life by captivating sound design. Plus, as an Audible member, choose one title a month to make yours forever. And now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Just visit audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500. That's audible.com/WonderyPod or text WonderyPod to 500-500.
Wow!
Nice!
Yeah!
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/Wondery and use code Wondery for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/Wondery. Code Wondery.
Welcome to the Nerdist Podcast and my birthday. It's my birthday. Oh. I share a birthday with Boris Karloff, Billy the Kid, Miley Cyrus, and I think it's just the four of us. I think it's just us. I'm not sure there's actually
a birthday party ever.
Oh, that would be an amazing. Yeah, me, Miley, and a bunch of corpses. Boris Karloff. Well, he's really taking this Frankenstein thing pretty far. Wouldn't that be awesome if they actually resurrected Boris? That's what they should have done when Boris Karloff died. A Victor Frankenstein type should have resurrected him with other body parts. Just like, that's like a meta Frankenstein monster waiting to happen.
Happy birthday, Chris!
My Frankenstein monster, Boris Karloff.
All right, I'm not sure if that was a whale song or. What that was.
That was me. That was your birthday present. I learned how to do a whale song for you.
Oh,
that was
that's
me singing happy birthday to you in a whale song.
How's that present supposed to make me have any kind of an orgasm? Thanks. Oh, wait. Do it one more time.
I can't. I'm choking on my spit.
It doesn't sound like what a whale would say. Are you a whale doing a human voice? Because that would be really amazing. All right. I'm into it. I'm a little into it. I'd like to thank a new sponsor to this episode of the Nerdist Podcast, Shutterstock.com. Shutterstock is a place where you can find the perfect video for your next creative project, whether a website, or an advertisement, or a multimedia presentation. They have over 700,000 high-quality stock video clips, 2D animations, 3D motion graphics, whatever you need. A variety of formats, HD, maybe whale videos, maybe whales impersonating humans, and just like going to school to try to... You, the big kid in the back! You, the slick big kid in the back! Go on, do it.
I'm not doing anything.
You, the bald, slick kid.
No whale song for you.
Standing in the back with the puddle.
Spoiled.
You come up to the board.
No, that's not a very good whale song.
Nope, I guess I can't do it the way you did. Nope. But Shutterstock gives you all the assets you need to take your creative projects to the next level. You can sort by category, resolution, contributor, clips, whatever. You save them to a clip box, and then you can view them anytime and share them with your team members. And they have amazing customer service, 24-hour customer support throughout the week, and super flexible pricing. So, if you need any kind of video assets, go to Shutterstock.com, get a free account, no credit card needed. Once you decide to purchase, you can use the offer code NERDIST11, and then new accounts will get 30% off any package. That's Shutterstock.com, 30% off new accounts, offer code NERDIST11. Now, this episode of the Nerdist Podcast is The Hives, who are you may know as an awesome Swedish garage rock band. Garage rock band? What am I, 11 years old? But they're great. I love the Hives, and they were playing at the Wiltern, and so we sort of took a shot and we were like, hey, the Hives, would you like to be on the Nerds podcast? And they said yes in Swedish. Well, I think that's what they said. I don't know. We showed up and they didn't ask us to leave in any language, so I guess that worked out all right. And then we're going to tack a song from that show on the end of the podcast. But really nice, guys. I'm really interested to hear about the Swedish rock scene. So this is it, the Nerds Podcast, episode number 287 with the Hives.
Enjoy, everybody.
Whoa, fuck, whale! I mean, actually, I actually mean you're very thin.
Oh, God, you're a piece of shit.
What?
You're a piece of shit.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
We can just grab the mic. Let's say you walked from here to Beverly Hills.
Yes, I did.
You walked from the Wiltern Theater.
I'm part of a primitive people. You know, we have that's our only mode of transportation.
You're a pedestrian culture.
Yeah,
we are not a pedestrian culture in Los Angeles.
I have noticed.
And the funny thing to me is when you go to New York and people go, how far is that thing? You're like, yeah, it's like 15 blocks. And you go, it's no big deal. In Los Angeles, if you say something is 3 blocks away, people are like, well, fuck, I'm not going there. Why would I walk 3 blocks?
But also, some of these blocks here are insane. Like, one block will be the Warner lot or something, and it keeps going for hours.
This is not a well-planned city. I don't think anyone's going to argue there was any grand design when they built Los Angeles.
No, but that's also kind of what's neat about it. I really like that.
Do you guys like playing in Los Angeles?
Yeah, it's great.
We really like it.
Always had really good shows there.
Oh, good.
And a lot of good, great crowds and good times.
That's good, because sometimes the complaint about Los Angeles is that because there are so many like industry people and performer types here that sometimes they get a little like,
yeah, people say that about a lot of big cities, but I don't know. I don't really feel that way. At least not. We always had great, like super excited kids at our shows in Los Angeles, I think.
But your shows are energetic, so like I think
we poke them in the eye enough so that they start reacting.
You smack them around and poke them. They would have to be assholes not to have a good time at your show.
Yeah. But isn't that what you meant when you said industry people, though?
Yes, that's exactly what I meant. I think it was pretty clear.
I remember the first time, or like one of the earliest times when we were here, like, oh, Los Angeles, this is so cool. We're in Los Angeles. And we were going to, I think you and me were going to like, let's go to Guitar Center. It's on the street.
Yeah.
And we were at like the Grafton or like the Marquee or somewhere up there. And then like, it's on the same street. Like,
oh, yeah.
Just start walking.
Oh, that is a long
it really
walk.
Took forever.
It's also
a bizarre walk because it's like you get to a block and it's like, oh, here's where the Subway and the McDonald's and the, you know, the Taco Bell is. So we know what that is. Then we keep walking. And then we get like 4 blocks later, you get to another block where there's the Subway.
The same exact.
Taco Bell and a McDonald's. Like, so you feel like you kind of, it's like, it's all repeating like Sisyphus.
Yeah. Yes, it is a Sisyphean effort to live in Los Angeles and then constantly see the same.
At least if you're walking.
Yeah, but most towns where you go to now, like so much of America, I'm actually kind of interested to find out like what it's like in your home country. Where in America, a lot of cities were revitalized by these weird little plazas being built of like a Starbucks and then a Chili's and then a Walmart, you know, and like kind of running all the small individually owned businesses out of town.
That's happening in Sweden.
Is it?
Now.
Oh, really?
It's getting worse and worse. Like all the shops, small shops have to close down and they're just building.
It happened faster in like, because it's Sweden, it happened faster in clothing and IKEA, like clothing and furniture.
Yeah.
Like IKEA, I think, took over the furniture bit and then H&M took over the clothing bit. It hasn't happened as much, but there's still most cafes and stuff are still owned by people.
Yeah, but now, I mean, they're building like malls and stuff outside the cities.
Yeah.
All the small shops, even if it's the same, you know, same shop, same brand, people will still go to the, you know, they can get their furniture and clothes and liquor at the same
one
time.
Stop. Yeah, one
really?
Stop.
The furniture, liquor, clothing store?
Well, not one store, but one stop. Please, in the same parking.
Please tell me that all the... Do all the IKEA names actually mean anything, or are those made-up words for dumb Americans that sound Swedish?
No, most of them actually mean something, or are names, or close to names.
A lot of Swedish names.
Are they? Okay.
A lot of person's names.
Yeah.
Bjarne. Like, that's a guy. And it'll be like a bookshelf or something.
We named him after the... we named the armoire after him.
Yeah. Bjarne. But I don't know what else, like... I don't know, maybe there are made-up names, but I think most of them are either sound like places, maybe places that don't exist, or people.
Yeah. I hope this doesn't sound like a ridiculous question, but do you feel like the infusion of IKEA into American culture has helped Americans appreciate Sweden more in a weird way? Or has it helped you guys kind of burrow a little bit more into the fabric of American culture?
I think so. I mean, it's a really... I try to stay out of IKEA stuff in my house, but it's the best way of, like, if you need furniture for, like, your first apartment,
right,
there's no cheaper, better way of doing it.
A lot of those, like, moving away from home boxes where you have, like, one box with all the cutleries and plates and glasses and everything.
Yeah, all the measurements and pots and pans.
Knives,
like, you buy it as a kit.
It's all done. You just walk into it and they have those room setups at IKEA. You just go, I'll take that. Can you just put that in my house?
Yeah.
And then I'll be done.
A bedroom and a cutlery kit.
Yeah, when we were young, when our first older friends that moved from home.
Yeah.
We'd move to this place, like, it was up on a hill in our hometown. There were a few tall buildings where they gave you a cut deal. Like, they gave you a good deal if you were under 25.
Okay.
So you could move there. And then everybody bought the same kit that was like a bookshelf. And there was like this weird table with tile on it and a huge couch in like fake ox blood leather couch. And everybody pretty much had the same setup. It was just sometimes you walk into an apartment and it's mirrored.
Yes.
So the couch is on the other wall, but everybody had the same apartment and the same furniture.
I feel like we had a version of that in America too. It was that same kind of, it looked a little industrial because it was like unfinished wood,
mm-hmm,
and then like the same kind of futon and the same kind of entertainment center bookshelf with that metal bracket in the back.
You know,
it's like your entire living room furniture set for like $300.
Yeah, which is a good deal, you know. And when you move to your first apartment, I kind of feel like you're not supposed to have that much money. It's probably good not to.
It's probably better. But I want to know, how did you guys break out of, like, what was it that kind of helped you break into the American music scene? Because you guys have been around for a while. There's like, there was some iteration of your band that goes back to like 89, right?
Nah, not really. 92.
92?
Like year zero.
Yeah.
Which is when, but we were like in 1989, we were too young to, I think. Maybe some of us were fiddling with guitars or something.
Yeah.
I guess you were. Like, you played, like, Guns N' Roses or Shadow songs or something, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't have bands back then, though.
We had dads with guitars.
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I think all of us pretty much had dads.
Yeah.
Except maybe Matt. He had a dad that was interested in music but didn't play, but all the others, there were, like, guitars lying around the house.
What's the sort of typical Swedish family unit like?
It's 2.1 kids.
Yeah.
2.2 maybe at this point. And like mom and dad, Volvo and dog. I think it's pretty, you know, it's been, or at least it was when we were kids. I think it's pretty similar now.
It's the same.
Yeah.
Sweden is one place that I've always really, really, really wanted to go, and I've never been.
You should go. It's fun.
What are some good places? Where's it?
It's more about a time of year. You need to go like spring, summer.
Yeah.
Actually, this summer was awful, totally terrible. But that's when you should go, and then it's really beautiful and pretty and, like, picture. Because there are such short summers, everything is super green.
Yeah.
So it looks like Narnia or Lord of the Rings-ish kind of greenery, but also with some nice sunshine.
Just long enough when everything just kind of melts away for a second.
And then it starts raining and it becomes autumn, happens.
Should I go to Stockholm? Where should I go?
Stockholm's nice.
Yeah. You should actually kind of go. If you want to see Swedishness, you should go to where Vigilante lives.
A little bit. I mean, you would go to Stockholm, spend a few days there, and then maybe go up a little bit up north, I think.
Okay.
It's more beautiful than... I mean, south is beautiful too, but
North is more specifically Sweden. Yeah. The south kind of looks like
Denmark.
Yeah, or it could be England. Or
can a stupid American with very limited language skills get around all right in Sweden?
It's really easy. Everybody loves to speak English.
That is
they're
very
ecstatic.
Good for us.
If they meet someone, especially an American, they'll be really excited.
Really?
Wow, I'm always, want to talk to you.
I'm always afraid to tell everyone that
really,
I'm American when I travel
really
abroad.
You're going to be popular, right? Like, people love talking
I'm afraid,
to
I'm afraid to admit that I'm American when I travel abroad because I'm going to be like, oh, you guys.
No, but it's still like, you know, everybody grew up with American TV and stuff.
Yeah, well, what shows? What did you guys get?
When we were kids, like, you know, that V for Victory
show? Of course.
McCahan. What else do we have? Dallas.
You got
huge.
Dallas?
Yeah, Dallas, Falcon Crest.
Falcon Crest, I mean, Dynasty.
We had all that shit.
Got fucking Falcon Crest.
Yeah. In the 80s, like all that stuff, like American soaps were so big because Sweden was sort of, you know, it had a history of being a socialist country and it still has a lot of socialist ideals, I think.
Yeah.
But also we're very intrigued by like Dallas, that all these like rich assholes running around throwing money at each other. I think it really like, wow, it opened people's eyes to a different world. It was super popular. Like there were 8 million people in Sweden living in Sweden at the time, and at least 2 million watched Dallas every week.
Oh my God.
It was so
it was
big.
Huge. I mean, we didn't have, when American TV started, you know, this, I guess maybe in the 80s, it kind of exploded, and all those series got huge. Like, because the TV we had in the past was pretty boring stuff. You know, we had two channels.
Yeah.
Run by
channel
the
one, channel two. That's it.
they were run by the state.
Yeah. So when we were younger, we only had it was only the two channels.
Yeah.
No commercials, no nothing. And they would like buy in Dallas or Falcon Crest or whatever. And you know,
but you're without commercials, so you'd get really confused. Every once in a while, it just go black and then come on back again.
You didn't.
Which was like
no
insert
clue.
Commercial here. What happened?
I thought it was like a trick to make it more excited. Like
yeah, like it went black for a bit, and only later would you realize that that's where they put the commercials. Yeah.
Oh, that's hilarious! Was the show subtitled or did they dub? Did they dub in Swedish?
Subtitled. No, I think that's how we all learned to speak English. From just watching movies and, you know, watching movies and having it subtitled all the time.
Yeah.
You can kind of hear it and you see and you start to recognize. I remember being in the UK with my mom and dad, and then it was subtitled in English, and I would ask about these words. Like, that's kind of how you learned.
I mean,
a lot of Swedes are very good at speaking English. If you go to a lot of other European countries, they're not very good at it at all. Like, no. Holland and Sweden are the countries where they're by far the best at speaking English in Europe, and that's because there was no dubbing. It was subtitles.
Well, and also, you know, I feel like...
Plus, it's weird. Like, we were in France on holiday once, and, like, MacGyver shows up and goes, like, that's not... And there's, like, in Germany, they ran into problems when Al Pacino died, or rather, Al Pacino's voice died.
Right.
So they had to hire another one because Al Pacino was still making movies. Like, so his voice changed from one movie to the next.
This is Jonah Ray.
Hey.
Hey, welcome, Jonah Ray.
It's got to be a good...
Start over.
Okay, we're going to start over. These guys are in a band called The Hives.
The Hives.
Yeah.
No, I'm sure Jonah knows
Hi.
It.
Hi.
This
Jonah, nice to meet you.
Jonah is the biggest music nerd on the podcast. So
it's not saying much with the other two guys.
Hey, come on.
What?
No, that's true.
Yes, it is.
No, that's actually true.
Sorry, there was many parking, horrible. But I blocked in Herbie Hancock for a bit.
Rocket.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's cool.
That's
I was
awesome.
Getting angry. I was trying to pull out, and I was just like, "What the fuck? These guys fucking come on!" And then like the security comes up, he's like, "Do you mind pulling back so Herbie Hancock can get out of here?" I was like,
"Wow,
I'm fine with that."
Was Herbie Hancock playing this birthday party?
I think it's a graduation.
It's a graduation.
Yeah.
What? Herbie Hancock's playing a graduation?
It's Los Angeles.
That's what happened seconds ago.
Yeah.
He just pulled out.
Was the graduation just like the little mannequin legs walking back and forth? I fucking love that.
That's
video.
The Herbie Hancock that we like, isn't
yeah.
it? There's some other stuff he did that you know. My
there was
dad
more
was a big like bebop jazz fan.
Yeah,
it's hard to get around when you were a kid.
there's more bad than good.
Is there really?
Nah.
Well, now there's a whole graduation soundtrack.
Exactly.
Did you get to meet Herbie Hancock?
No. Just saw his car and his driver.
Did you take his parking space?
No. He was just there blocking it up.
You have a lot of anger for Herbie Hancock.
If
right
your
now.
Career is kind of going downhill, which I'm not saying, you know, I don't know much about Herbie Hancock's career, but he's
you
playing
kept
at
up?
Graduation. It's all I know.
Sure.
And I feel like it's been a while since he had a huge hit.
Right.
But he probably has a really big audience. You know, he'll play Norway and a couple of thousand people show up.
Right.
A thousand maybe. But at what point when your career kind of starts going down, do you stop having a driver?
I think maybe it's one of those things where
Or do you think the graduation, the people that booked the party, booked a driver for Herbie?
They may have booked a driver for him.
Okay, that
Although
makes sense.
I do think that...
He doesn't have like a live-in butler driver.
He
guy.
Might. Some of those guys, you know, like if you hit the music industry and wrote a few hit songs like in the 70s, 80s, yeah. like when yeah. music business was really...
Juicy.
You might still have that shit.
When you made money off of music.
Yeah,
exactly. And you invested it in properties. Yeah, and, you know, yeah. And everything went pretty well.
You have to invest it in a posse. I think that's the best way to do
if
it.
If you have a swank...
Invested in a posse like MC Hammer.
Yeah, exactly.
Like just
that worked out well.
50 yeah, people.
That worked out really well. Is it? But if you get used to those kind of weird creature comforts, at a certain point, you might sacrifice everything just to still have a butler and a driver because you just still psychologically. He might not even drive.
It might be actually be that good to have a butler and a driver.
It could be really good.
None of us know. I take it. You guys don't know.
We don't. We don't.
We don't know either.
We do not have butlers.
No.
But
we're Swedish. We get nervous if people like, you know, people place a bar of soap. Take the wrapping off the bar of soap in the toilet to get nervous, like
you have to work.
You shouldn't do. You don't have to work for me.
No, please. I feel that way about bathroom attendants.
Yeah,
when there's a guy there just to like give you, you know, a towel, I opt to just not wash my hands.
Because rather than have to deal with him?
I don't want to have to go through it and then tip him for something I would
so
do
you,
on my own.
You put your gross, like, dick-laden hands on everything. Because
how gross is your dick that you're so worried about touching other people
well,
when you touch yours?
I still don't like
good
the
point.
Idea of someone touching their junk and then just putting their hands out into the world because they have some weird social hang-up with bathroom
Well,
attendants.
It's actually possible to go to the bathroom as a guy and not use your hands.
It's just a dance you have to do
just
to get it
to,
out.
You just have to...
Yeah.
No, but again, I mean, it's not like if you're taking your pants off, the penis is not the first thing you touch, I guess.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, unless you want to have an awesome time, then it is.
Well, there is that.
What is happening in 1993? What's happening in music in Sweden that kind of inspired you guys to start playing?
I think what inspired us was what wasn't happening. Yeah. I think we felt that awesome music was missing in this era of like shoegazing indie pop and I guess grunge.
Oh yeah.
And we thought it could be more fun than this was what
also,
we felt, I think.
Also growing up in a, you know, small shitty town in with the longest winters in the world, you know.
Yeah.
It's a pretty good way to spend some off time.
What was the
and like the fun of just playing electric guitar as loud as you can.
Yeah.
It's really fun. Still, to this day, it's one of, you know.
Is it true that you guys tried to send stuff over to Recess Records to be put out? Like
probably.
Yeah,
we sent a bunch of stuff to a bunch of labels that we thought put out like punk stuff.
Yeah, it was good. I mean, there was a lot of good stuff that started coming out like around the same time you guys got going in Sweden. A lot of good, like it was the garage scene, but also like a lot of good just punk and hardcore was coming out of the Scandinavian countries.
And that's kind of the bands we would play with because that was the only people that were doing shows were punk and hardcore bands and maybe metal bands. Like, so we'd play with them pretty much and. So I think a lot of people just thought we were a pretty crappy hardcore band.
Yeah.
You know, we weren't trying to play hardcore punk, but it was fast enough so people kind of, you know, they're pretty good. It's like fast and energetic and stuff, but I don't know, man. Like, I think that there was a lot of misunderstandings about what we were trying
claps.
To do. Yeah.
How long did it take you before you started figuring out, oh, okay, this is who we are and this is what our point of view is and this is what we do?
Well, I think that it kind of happened in two, like maybe around 97, we found some sort of a sound or what we wanted to do and kind of, you know, sound and stage wise and what the band was, what we wanted to do. And then like, I think in like 99 or so, we wrote a bunch of songs that we felt were like, this is pretty perfect.
Yeah.
You know.
Is that what would become
the Veni Vidi Vicious record? Yeah. I feel like we felt like there was a breakthrough. There was a few songs that we wrote for the first record.
Barely Legal.
Yeah, for Barely Legal there was like AKI.V and Here We Go Again and maybe like Hail Hail Spin Rule, and they felt kind of different from the other songs.
Was it a choice of maybe just slowing it down a bit?
Kind of, yeah.
A little bit, maybe.
Yeah.
Or just polish it up a little bit.
Yeah.
How is it that when people...
Playing the second chorus twice, stuff like that.
Just adding that other 30 seconds to a song.
Which made it, because people don't take it... Like, no matter how good a song that's a minute and 30 long is, people don't take it seriously. Which is sort of a bummer, because there's some pretty brilliant music. Like, and also the album length. Like, there was a lot... We got a lot of shit in the early days for, like... Well, you can't put out a record that's only 27 minutes long. And we're like, excuse me, First Ramones, Rain in Blood by Slayer. Like, what's wrong with those records? I think they're pretty good, you know.
Yeah, I like a short record. I don't like a record that, like, sticks around too long. I like to be able to, because I like the turnover rate. I like to be able to just keep on listening through.
I think the important thing with anything, whether it be a comedy joke or a video or a song, is like, it should just be as exactly long as it needs to be. And if it only needs to be a minute 31, then that's how long it should be.
Yeah.
And but it feels weird to tag on more.
But it was easier in the past, because, like, you know, you only had, was it like an hour tops
right.
on the record?
A record was like 45 minutes or something.
You could do, I mean, you can do a double CD, but these days when people only release it digital,
yeah,
they just keep adding songs. Like, it'll be like 40 songs on the album.
Right.
Yeah.
And also, I think it kind of, and then, like, from album, like, vinyl album, which is, like, you know, it's fun to listen to and stuff, then CD came, and then, because people always feel like they need to do all that you technically can, and then you got, like, a 70-minute record, but you still have to put out one every 2 years.
Yeah.
So then you stretch the ideas you get in 2 years to 70 minutes instead of 45, which, you know, kind of just becomes a bummer. It's just lingering on.
Does the idea of an album release still, does it, I wonder sometimes, does it really mean anything? Like, when we have friends who release comedy records and they go, this is the release day. Is it like, does that really mean anything anymore? Or is it just like, fuck it, just put it out?
It means something to us. Like, it's a sense of accomplishment.
Sure.
Like, we finished another one. Yay, it's great. Yay, you know, there is that. And I think that people, well, there is a release date because there is a date before which you can't hear it.
Right.
That still happens.
Yeah, that's true. That it is impossible.
Before it exists. So, yeah. You know, there is a point to something. There's 12 new songs, you know.
Is there enough radio support now? Or is it, because a lot of the radio stations...
Could always be more.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. But I wonder, like, I don't really listen to a lot of... I don't really listen to terrestrial radio anymore, and I wonder, like, what station would I listen to now? Like, there's so much... Because I worked at K-Rock in the 90s, but so much of the, like, the breaking music is now, it doesn't really seem to be happening on radio anymore, unless it's,
no,
like,
that's probably true.
Yeah, I mean, there are shows on, I mean, I can only speak for Los Angeles rock radio, but, like, you know, there are shows
Steve
that
Jones.
Steve Jones
is amazing.
His show is great. Then right after that you got Rodney. And Joe Sipp from Wax has a show on 98.7. And, you know, there are, like, there's shows on the stations that you can go to, you can tune in to find new music. But
is it hard to just turn on a station and leave it on all day, or what are you saying?
It's I mean, I there's like three stations I go throughout. I mean, like Jack, which is just kind of anything.
So just a weird playlist.
Yeah, and then there's K Rock, and sometimes they'll surprise you, but most of the time it's really just 90s to like maybe early 2000s specific rock radio, and there's like the occasional, like, they'll play Gautier a lot. You know?
Yeah,
but it's, yeah.
Sometimes it feels like they add one song per year, a little bit.
Yeah, and it's
kind of like it's an oldie station that plays modern music.
Yeah, I don't know.
Like, I feel like it's we ran into this a lot. Like, where we make an album and come back, and then like, yeah, you know, and we come to a city, and then like, yeah, you know, the radio station used to play you a lot here. Turn into Spanish talk radio.
Or
like,
yeah.
The radio station used to play you a lot here is now Christian.
Yeah.
Or, you know, all these things that were, how do you turn it into, do you buy the building or just the frequency, or is it the same staff?
They buy the station, like station groups come in and they'll buy the station, the, you know, like the that FM, say the frequency, and then they just reprogram it. They put in a whole different staff, and, you know, might be the same sales
team.
It
would be weird if you're like, yeah, I used to play the Hives on the radio, now it's Christian music.
Now it's Los Hives.
Yeah.
But I apologize, this is a dumb question. Do you record Swedish versions of your albums as well, or do you?
No.
No.
No, we never really. We tried singing in Swedish for a bit in the beginning.
Yeah.
But it wasn't that we, you know.
I guess we started out listening to a lot of Swedish punk.
Yeah.
So the first thing we did was, you know, we played Swedish punk.
Yeah.
What were some of those bands? Did they ever break? I mean, because I know Burning Heart, which was basically European Epitaph, right?
Yeah, pretty much.
But they didn't really have. There was more like the skate scene, you know, more
hardcore.
Hardcore, and they sang in English. But I think this was before the whole skate thing happened.
Yeah.
Well, there are some of them that are really popular. Like if you go into punk record stores in Los Angeles, there are guys that are like, Asta Kask, that's awesome, and like all these Swedish bands that we listened to as kids. Because it kind of becomes more exciting, I guess, or becomes rarer because it's in Swedish and stuff.
Yeah.
And will ask us specific things about the lyrics, what they're about and stuff. It's some punk store on like Melrose or Fairfax or something.
There's still one on Melrose, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's
Headline.
The guy. He loves like Swedish. And Swedish crust punk is big, but and they can, you know, that you kind of can't hear what they're singing anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's kind of just cool that they're singing in Swedish.
It never fails to fascinate me that for bands like yourselves where English is a second language, but your songs, there's really no trace of any foreign accent to us. Like it sounds, if I didn't know anything about you guys, I found out like those guys are from Sweden. I wouldn't have, you know, like. Yeah, there's something funny about like when Europeans or when they sing, they can have the thickest accent and still be like, "Hey everybody, I'm."
I think that's just maybe singing, or it's just the early influences of American rock and roll that still.
I think that's probably it. Like I think that sounds cooler when Iggy Pop sings than when Paul Weller sings or whatever. So therefore, it kind of becomes an American accent. But also like. It's what they call in the U.S. They call the Nashville accent, right? Like when everybody sings, they have the same accent.
Yeah,
yeah,
pretty much. Unless you're really going like Midwestern or you know whatever.
Which is what Iggy Pop sounds like when he's not singing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. He kind of does it when he's singing too, a little bit. Like there's some kind of Midwestern twang that you get in like Dead Boys and stuff.
Yeah,
like that.
Dog.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is there ever going to be a Hives country album at some point? Is there any country in there?
We had a big country interest, especially Nicholas, the other guitar player, was really interested, or I guess fascinated by, like, new Nashville country.
Yeah.
In maybe 10 years ago or something. Yeah. Like, he would listen to Martina McBride and stuff like that and laugh at the lyrics or whatever. But he loved it, but there was also, like, some kind of smirk going on.
Sure,
yeah.
And Shania Twain and all that. But I feel like that was sort of the golden era of that music.
Yeah.
Now it sounds like, you know, they're so desperate, they incorporate everything to get a hit. They'll be like rapping.
Of course.
Yeah.
Heavy metal guitars.
Yep.
It's like you can still call it a country record if you put a cowboy hat on it, but it sounds like Nickelback with CeeLo.
Yeah. I know. I don't even understand that. I think maybe a couple of years ago, I was kind of flipping channels, and I'm like, you know, I'll watch the Country Music Awards. I'm just curious.
That's
I don't know.
Great. What that's so amazing.
And you watch it, and you're like, there's not one country song in this entire fucking show. There's no.
And also,
I guess the subject matter, though, still country. It's all like
horses,
truck, horse,
yeah,
beer,
yeah,
chicks,
yeah,
yeah, and but being Christian about it.
But
that's mainly. And what's the with Taylor Swift and her? That's just pop songs.
Yeah, it's pop songs.
That's just pop songs. She's talking about like.
Is she from Nashville? Is that what they call? Why they call it country or something?
I think that's like her earliest stuff was like just Christian country, and then you know someone just finds her and says, "Well, you're really attractive, and you got a voice, and sing these pop songs and make billions of dollars."
Yeah, I mean,
but the difference with her songs opposed to most pop songs is the sheer amount of words in them.
Yeah, that's
is that
true,
a country thing?
It must be.
You sing a lot of words.
I love that old kind of Waylon Jennings stuff, which is really just kind of greasy and sad, and you know, and even if you go further back, like Ray Price, like really fucking sad country songs.
I really like that stuff. What's that guy? With the cigarettes on the album cover.
Tex Williams.
Tex Williams, yeah. That stuff's good. But there's some awesome Porter Wagoner stuff, especially his stuff where he sings, like that song Rubber Room.
No.
That's amazing. It's really great. It's about him going insane. It's got a country song about going insane and how they audially try to make him sound insane by adding reverb at the end. So you're supposed to hear that he's in a rubber room.
That's really
funny.
It's
really good. And then he has that other thing, what would you do? It's like, what would you do if Jesus came to visit you?
oh, wait,
where you
a
hide
minute.
Those like porn magazines and stuff like
that. That sounds really familiar.
It's really
that
great.
Sounds really familiar. And something we should really all think about, you guys. Like, what would yeah, we do?
Well, so if you think about a lot of that early, even like the Johnny Cash era of just like, you know, country style music getting started, it was still like they were all on speed.
Yeah.
And like, you know, it's like you were saying, it just
which kind of made it awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
They were sad and on speed.
Yeah, they're on speed and they're playing that slow. Holy shit.
Well, yeah,
that's a lot of concentration.
It's not that they were playing slow, it's that they were playing for 36 straight hours.
Like, yeah.
They got all that weird practice in and they're making everything.
Yeah. Yeah, but that stuff, like old country music is. You know, that's obviously awesome. Like, there's some really great stuff.
There's a really interesting cover of I've had for, like, it's just a bootleg. I mean, maybe they released it, but it's got to be, like, over 10 years old, but it's Radiohead covering Rhinestone Cowboy by Glen Campbell.
Mm-hmm.
And it really, it's like, they don't really, they do it a little kind of like earlier Radiohead style, mm-hmm. but I kind of wanted to hear it dip more into country, but just hearing Tommy be like, like a rhinestone cowboy. Jeez. Like, it's not like it almost works.
Glen Campbell is great too. This is the smoothest music I know.
Fucking Galveston and oh my god. Maybe one of these days you'll cover a Glen Campbell song.
We play that song Highwayman.
Oh nice.
Highwayman. That kinda had all the country heroes in it.
Yeah. You guys I heard you just played Vegas last night?
Yeah.
How's Vegas?
Sorry.
No,
yeah,
you
no,
go.
No, I just remembered something. And I
what?
Just, no, you guys are on tour right now with Fiddler.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, yeah. They're a great band.
Yeah, great band.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I grew up with the main kid.
Zach? Yeah. Is that the main kid?
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's a wine?
Yeah, yeah.
Jonah's from Hawaii.
I'm from Hawaii, yeah, cool. So is he. But like, yeah.
Oh, that's great.
I'm just, I was excited when I heard you guys were on tour with them. They're great.
It's pretty great, yeah.
How about how?
What's great is like he is from Hawaii, and therefore we kind of thought he looked Hawaiian, but he's actually Japanese Irish.
Yeah, but that's
which
pretty much
kind
what
of made
all
him
people,
look. It made him look Hawaiian.
That's pretty much what all Hawaiian people look like, though. That's like he looks like every kid I ever grew up
yeah.
with.
Yeah,
so you're just a weird anomaly because you're Portuguese.
Yeah, well, no, it's just I took like my brother looks like he's from Hawaii. I just look white. I just look white.
So that's why you had to get out.
Yeah,
you
exactly.
were ostracized by the Hawaiian community.
Yeah.
Two other country artists I feel we should mention is sure. Dale Watson, who's been a favorite of ours for a long time. You know him?
No.
He's like he's not like mainstream country, but he's really awesome. Yeah. Super great. Like
Dale Watson?
More of in that sort of Waylon Jennings style.
Okay.
So people should listen to him. He has like a million albums out. He's from Austin. It's really great.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then there's a Swedish country artist who's like all that trucking songs.
Yeah.
Is horrible in English, calls himself Red Jenkins, and he has the thickest accent. And we would listen to like his 7 inches. We would put them on mixtapes and they show up every once in a while. It's like he sings about America too, like about trucking in America because he's such a fan of that music. But it's like, and then I drove closer to the Macon city lines. Like, what are you talking about?
No, you didn't drive there at all.
No, you've never been. Pretty sure.
Is there?
It was Borlänge or something. Hedemora or something.
Well, before I ask you about Vegas, what's the sort of cultural temperature in Sweden? Is there kind of that? Is there a region that is analogous to the South in America?
Well, there are places that are like more backwaters. Or you mean like?
Sure.
Or do you mean like South as in like backwaters yet wealthy?
Well, well, now there is some of that, but I just mean that sort of like that sort of Southern ideal, that like really
because proud to
that
be
really proud, yeah.
National
because,
pride.
Because if you're
well, where he lives is sort of like that.
Yeah.
There's a lot
I think
of
it's,
like,
I think you have that, but it's more spread out. It can be up north. It could be south. Yeah. It's more about, you know, towns or certain areas around Sweden, I think. Yeah.
Is there a cultural clash between what you said was kind of classically sort of a socialist ideal and then what I imagine would be kind of, you know...
like a Texan.
Like an emerging kind of anti-movement to that for like a little more...
Well, no, there's not a big anti-movement, not really. Like, I think that the thing with the what happened with socialism in Sweden was that it kind of... It did really well. Everybody loved it, and it made everybody kind of, you know, everybody has an okay life.
Yeah.
And there's like a big social safety net, and most people do fine, and, you know, schools are good and all that, which meant that two generations later, people are used to this. And then all they want is a little bit of a bigger keep a little bit more of their paycheck. So, and then they're like, what the fuck happened with the school? What the fuck happened with the hospital? Like, I just wanted more money, and then, you know, so it's kind of a, it's in a, I think that's more what happened. I don't think culturally there's a lot of people that are opposed to it. Well, there's more. There's a lot of people that are like, if I own this lake, I want to build a house in it. I can build a house in my lake.
Right.
But that's not kind of the way it works in Sweden. There's a lot of, you can't really, like you can walk on people's lawns and stuff. Like you can't shoot people if they walk in your lake. Crazy idea.
Sounds like
know.
No country I want to be a part of.
So there's no like stand your ground law. This is my property. What? That's all I needed. Bam.
I think there are people that get mad if you walk on their property, but they can't really legally do anything about it.
No. I don't think you're allowed to walk on the lawn, though, but you can walk on
land. That, yeah.
So most Swedish people do not own guns. It is not a firearm.
No, not really.
Not a firearm.
Which is sort of like, you know, I just kind of recently, or like a few years ago, found out what the idea is, you know, the carrying gun. I get the whole like 1 minute man thing, and you know, but now that it's like, well, if I don't have a gun, I can't protect myself. The upside of no one having a gun is that if somebody get mad at you, he'll hit you in the face,
right,
and he'll hurt, but he probably won't shoot you dead.
Right.
So, if no one has a gun, there's less reason to carry a gun. I think that's the difference.
And I think also your weather prevents people from really going out and getting into too much trouble in the outside world for a large part of the year.
I wouldn't say so.
No?
It's part of the vodka belt, you know. There's heavy drinking going on. There's heavy drinking and a lot of fisticuffsmanship.
Yeah. How was it? So I want to hear about the Vegas show last night. The story that I heard was that everyone ended up in the pool after the show.
Yeah. It was great. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was weird playing. We never played a pool party.
It looked like an outdoor show.
We never played a pool party overlooking the Eiffel Tower.
Right.
Well, not in France.
An Eiffel Tower.
The real Eiffel. Oh, no, it's not the real Eiffel
Tower. A Eiffel Tower.
Yeah. I wonder, when they first built the Eiffel Tower, it probably never occurred to them, like, there's going to be another one of these somewhere
on
an 8th scale.
But Vegas is probably, like, our light guy said this, and I think it might be true, that Vegas is, you know, when our civilization is gone, Vegas is the best archaeological dig.
Yeah,
like it says the most about our culture, that it's like kind of like a greatest hits of Earth.
I guess
so. But made out of plastic and papier-mâché.
It really is like the control panel for the world. Every little piece is like, this is how New York
We need some Venice.
Some Venice.
It's
right
here. Yeah. I never thought about it. See, Vegas to me is just such a, I don't know. I feel creepy being there because it's so excessive in every way.
And yeah.
In our culture, we're sort of taught to believe like you can do whatever you want there, and it doesn't matter, and it's like
it doesn't count.
It doesn't count in a weird sort of way.
Well, something to be said that you can just walk outside drinking. That can't happen in many other places in the country.
You can walk outside. Yeah, you can walk outside drinking at any hour of the day.
You just be on the sidewalk drinking.
No
it's
one
insane.
Will say anything to you. But you
they
guys
will say things like, can I have a dollar? Or,
yeah.
You want to go to this casino?
What? Where was your show at the Paris? Where was it?
No, it was at the Cosmopolitan.
Oh, the Cosmopolitan.
A pool that is overlooking that Eiffel Tower and the Paris casino.
Yeah.
Kind of. It was really, really kind of cool. Like, it's bizarre because it's not set up to be like a concert venue, so the crowd is really far away in a pool.
Yeah.
But it also kind of made, you know, I'll remember it. And it was great, like really great crowd, and I think a lot of people travel there from other places and stuff.
Yeah.
And and I think it's a really fascinating place from, you know, growing up in Sweden, like we talked about it, sort of leaning towards socialism, like it's the polar opposite pretty much of how we grew up.
Of course.
Which is sort of, it's interesting, you know. I mean, there are things about it that are kind of like, do I really want to be part of this? But it's also like, as long as you can lie by a pool and people serve you beer, and it's sunny, I'm okay with that.
Can you imagine?
The seedy stuff is going on somewhere else.
If you could have been a rock star in any kind of era, which era would you want it to be? Because I think those stories are just like, yeah, old Elvis, you know, they'd put him on the top floor of Caesars and he'd shoot holes in the ceiling with his gun, and then they'd bring him girls and pills and, you know, does that hold?
I think it would be really great if it was like in the, I guess it would have to, Because I think air travel sucked for a lot of that time.
Sure.
But I think that it'd be really great to...
Maybe the 80s.
Maybe the 80s seemed great. Yeah,
pretty good.
Yeah. 80s seemed great, actually.
Yeah, still, like, and there's just enough technology, but still shit tons of money.
Yeah. Everyone's rich.
Yeah.
No, but the 80s seemed pretty interesting. But also, I'd like to add one thing from the 60s, which is the fact that you didn't realize you could get hearing damage.
Right. Oh,
so
right.
So just like full blown all amps on 10, blistering, and like in 73, like Clapton and Townsend can't hear shit, so they make no album for a few years.
Oh, right.
But it must have been really fun.
No one really gave a shit about anything back then.
No, exactly. But then also, like in the 60s, I feel like you didn't have like drug casualties in the same way. Like every drug was more a possibility than like you didn't see. Like where we grew up. You know, you knew what a speed freak looked like when he was 65.
Right.
So it's, you know, it kind of held less appeal, maybe.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Whereas in the 60s, it's like, have you tried this?
What are the effects? Yeah, who knows?
What the effects are, it's really
it
fun.
Opens yeah. your mind,
up,
man.
You can stay up all night. Just play rock and roll really fast.
That was a funny thing that E from the Eels brought up, where he was trying to write as many albums, like do three albums in a year, I think, which is something like the Beatles did. And they're mm-hmm. like they had a spat, just three albums in 1 year. And he was saying it was just being, he was getting really exhausted. And he realized, oh, well, they were all on speed.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, of course they were able to stay up and just make songs. It was just, I'm one guy smoking pot.
That's the funny thing about rock biographies, that they take the drugs out. Like, we were having so much fun. We were in the studio 24 hours a day. Like, and also, we just read a biography by a Swedish guy who played guitar for that band Europe. Remember that?
Yes,
band?
Of course.
He played guitar for that band while they were popular. He wasn't in the band before they were popular, but he kind of jumped on and was there for a while. And his biography is so funny because he writes a lot about taking tons of cocaine and what it did to him. Like, I thought my ideas were the greatest. And like, I felt so powerful and brilliant. And then he's same time he's really bummed that no one wants to record his song. Like, can we please put the two together?
Yeah, those kind of like old 80s rock documentaries are so amazing, just like the hair bands.
Yeah.
And you literally,
I think they aged the worst out of any other.
Yeah, without a doubt. But yeah, like the guys, you know, you see these old interviews with guys like the band Rat. And yeah, they're like, so who do you think, like, and someone asked them, like, what bands were their competition? Like, I think meaning what other hair metal bands. And they were like, man, we kind of view our competition as like the super bands, like Zeppelin and the Stones.
Yeah, they all think that.
Yeah.
And they're all super, like, they were so freaked out when, like, Nirvana came out.
Yeah.
They don't know what to do with themselves. Like, they're like, because it's so obvious that it's over.
And it was such a hard, right, it was such a hard turn. And it's like, all of a sudden, done. It was like, arena, arena, arena. And like, okay, it's all done now.
Well, things have gotten so flashy.
Yeah,
like
yeah,
you couldn't have added any, like, you know, New York Dolls, like, you know, dressed up in sparkles, and then it kind of, you know, glam, and then it got even bigger and more sparkling. The hair got bigger and the heels got higher, and then there was nowhere else for it to go except to just fucking topple over.
Yeah.
And it was just so sad.
But it's so funny when they talk about it. Those bands talk about what, like Nirvana, they're all like, yeah, I actually really liked it. Like, they're trying to...
yeah.
That must have been so fucking hard. I mean, you're being in a band, you've invested all this money in hair products and crazy costumes and pyrotechnics and stage shows, and it's like, here's a guy in a fucking flannel shirt with ripped up jeans, like, these goddamn kids, you know, like
and so it's very obvious that you can't, your next album can't be that. You can't make a Nirvana album your next album. It won't work.
No.
No one will buy it.
No, and I think some of them maybe tried. I think, didn't Kip Winger like try to do like a kind of an alternative album afterwards?
Didn't Garth Brooks try to do an alternative album?
Well, did Chris Gaines.
Chris Gaines. That was his,
that was his alter ego.
Crazy. They were not story wise. They weren't related, right? Chris Gaines was just another guy.
He was just another dude. They were gonna make a movie out of him,
and they never did.
No.
Do you think that Because this idea now that people's tastes are so splintered and we're such a niche culture that people can get specifically what they want, that there aren't, you know, like when you hear the idea of like, yeah, Garth Brooks sold 20 million albums, like are those days, do you think they're just completely over?
No, I mean, that Adele album, isn't that like 20 million albums?
Yeah. But she's like one out of almost everybody.
The year Garth Brooks sold 20 million albums, who else was doing it?
I don't know.
It's one per year. Celine Dion, Garth Brooks, you know, whoever these people are. And then now it's Adele, I guess. It's Coldplay 1 year, I think.
Oh, really?
Oh, maybe not 20. 12? I have no idea. But there were a lot of fucking albums. Anyway.
Yeah.
You know, it still happens, but you have to be able to appeal to people that don't like music at all. You have to appeal to people that don't give a shit about music, but they need one CD to have.
Yeah, they need to buy something at Starbucks.
I guess. Or a truck stop.
Yeah.
I guess that's true. I guess I never thought of it that way before. But you guys, you know, with what you do, would that be anything that you would really want anyway? Or would you rather just have the hardcore, passionate fans, but maybe have a few million less?
Yeah, I think so, kind of. Like, it'd be great to sell 20 million albums just to see what that's like, but there's kind of no turning back from that. Because the only way, either then you release your next album, you sell 10 million albums, and everybody's like, it's a failure.
Yeah.
Which is a bummer. Like, there's nowhere to go. And also, the other problem is kind of like, I'm not sure you want to be that famous.
Right.
You know, I just walked to Beverly Hills. I couldn't do that if I was, I don't know, who.
How do you define?
if I can, then I want to sell 20 million
records. You walked from here to Beverly Hills earlier.
How long did that take you?
I don't know, hour and a half.
Yeah, I guess so. It's a long walk, but it's we're just Wilshire the whole way.
I know, but the neighborhoods just seem like other realms. You're like, this is Korea.
It changes a lot.
This is
Korea town.
Which is fun.
And then once you get to the Miracle Mile, then you have the tar pits and then the museums.
It was too hot to really do it, though. I wouldn't recommend it.
How do you define success for yourself? Like, what is it in your head that makes you go, yes, we did it? Is it that the album is exactly what you want it to be? Is it attendance at shows? Is it what is it?
Well, kind of those things. I think that the album is as close to what we wanted to make as possible. And also the fact that we still can tour the world and make money.
Yeah.
It's pretty great. Then at what level that is kind of is secondary, I think. But like, I really love doing this, like going to new countries and like basically seeing the world and getting paid for it and getting to play rock and roll. It's pretty sweet.
Did that, because I remember when Veni Vidi Vicious came out, I was working at a record store in Venice Beach, and it was out, and it sold, you know, like for the people that knew the Hives, they came in and bought it, but it was, in LA at least, it was after the show you guys did with Rival Schools and International Noise Conspiracy.
At the Roxy.
Yeah. And I was at that show. I remember just, I was there to see you guys, and I remember just the... Like, no one could match you guys.
Yes.
Like, I remember, like...
Actually, that's how we measure success. If we play with other bands and we still think we're the best band on the bill. Sometimes, like, when we in the early days when we played with Refused, you just go, shit.
Yeah.
Like, damn it. And we also played with a few other bands, like Monster, and I think Raining Sound have beat us a few times. But other than, you know... I feel like that's like our main thing.
Yeah, I remember that was a weird turning point where, like, you know, so many people were coming into the store after that show just because it was like buzz had gotten out, and it's like, I heard these guys tore it up at the Roxy, and I was like, yeah, it was a good show. Also, Rival Schools and International, they're like, just take the Hives. Yeah. It was a very like direct thing, and then I remember just. It was also just because it was awesome because the album, not that like I really enjoyed Barely Legal, just kind of coming up and being like a punk kid, but the jump from Barely Legal to Veni Vidi Vicious was like you said before, it was like, you know, you had made that conscious decision to like have a like just a perfect record, and like all the way through, it's a great record, and also kind of hard to find sometimes on the original label.
Yeah, maybe. Probably.
What happened with the? What was the whole? Because it was on originally.
It came out
Burning
on
Heart.
Burning Heart, and they were people we knew from our hometown, Burning Heart, and they released the album. But it was kind of like they would release albums by us, and there wasn't really that much to it. Then Epitaph bought Burning Heart, and then wanted everybody to sign a contract, And then when we got popular, Epitaph sold us to Warner Brothers.
Yeah. That's got to feel so weird.
It's really weird. Yeah. We signed one record deal when we were like 16, and all these people who are so punk and independent sell us to a major label and take all the money. So we got really mad and signed with a different major label, basically.
You went on to...
Interscope.
Interscope, that's right. Yeah.
So where
that's
else?
The long and short of it.
Yeah, yeah. It was really weird because the album had to keep on getting pressed again. Like they would switch a label, and then we had all these different versions of the record. It was a really
just like, new logos.
Yeah,
constantly.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, because it was on Gearhead too. Like it was released on Gearhead Records in the States first, kind of.
Yeah. And I remember also it was like there were different prices because like
the
distributors were selling them for
was
different.
Like, they were so mad at that, like, oh. Because Gearhead we knew Mike Lavello at Gearhead and kind of, you know, and he wanted to release the album in the States. And because the deal, I think, was that Epitaph pick a few Burning Heart bands to release in the States.
Yeah, they don't do it.
And they didn't pick us. And then Gearhead, like, okay, we'll do it. Like, we'll release it. Yeah. And then after that, it kind of blew up.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember if that Last Refuse record was on Burning Heart, if it was just on Epitaph proper. Because before that, they were on Victory in the States.
Yeah.
But
that one probably got picked up because Burning Heart spent like that was their big thing. Like they spent a lot of money on that and like really tried hard on that.
Right? Yeah.
Is the idea at all of, you know, with people now like, oh, you should, because people tell comedians this all the time, you should just release a comedy special yourself, man, and just put it on the internet and see what happens. And we always try to explain to them like, you know, that works if you're Radiohead or Louis C.K., but it doesn't really, like, it's hard, you know, like, you really have to be in the top 1% in the field in order for the economics of that to make sense.
It's true. And, like, our new record is on our own label, but we do license it because we need help. Like, we don't think we're a really good rock and roll band. I don't think that automatically makes you a great promotion person or like, you know, whatever. Like,
it's not like you ever watch a band go, they got business savvy.
Well, Gene Simmons.
Well, yeah.
I mean, come on.
But that you don't see it at the show though, do you?
No, he doesn't spit blood and be like, okay, we have some new t-shirts. Yeah.
You got to sign these now.
Sign
these merch buyouts.
So in the States, just what are some of your kind of favorite cities to hit in the States?
Well, what are they? Like Los Angeles, New York.
Yeah, the big ones are
Seattle. Portland. It's probably the usual suspects, really. Yeah. Like,
but I like
anywhere. California is great.
California's great. I like Denver too, actually.
Denver's a really great city. Yeah. Have you guys played like Red Rocks or?
We're doing it. In 2 days.
Oh, that's awesome. I went to high school in Denver.
Oh, so cool.
Now
Denver's a beautiful place.
It's a perfect time of year to go, too, because the weather, it's like temperate. It's really lovely.
Yeah.
It's a really nice city.
Well, actually, we mostly care. Like, the shows are good pretty much anywhere. There'd be less people if you're in, like, the middle of the country or something. But we kind of just, because most of the day is not the show.
Yeah.
So Denver's nice because you can kind of go to horseback riding or whatever.
Right.
You can do other stuff.
And then at Los Angeles, you just recover from Vegas.
Now, Los Angeles, there's a lot of fun stuff to do in Los Angeles. Yeah. Like, you guys, you know, you live here.
I know, but so often...
Surfing, when you live possibly.
But, you know, when you live in a town, you don't really look at it like a tourist. You just take everything for granted. You're like, nah, well, I don't need to go to the planetarium. It's right there. It's all there the whole time. I need to fucking go.
I made a conscious effort with a friend to actually go, like, to Stockholm tourist attractions.
Yeah.
Because I'm also a lot of times kind of free during the day, so I can do it.
Are you guys? Are you getting to the point now where it's still, is it still kind of decadent for you guys on the road, or are you like, you know, we'll rest and be responsible and drink plenty of water and not stay up too late?
I think it's pretty much the same as it always been. We'll get really drunk once in a while, but we won't kind of coast on, you know, like constantly drink slowly during the day.
Yeah.
Where we're from, the way you drink is you stay sober for 5 days and work really hard, and then you get really drunk for 2 days. And then they tried to import like continental drinking habits to Sweden because people drank too much during the weekend and ended up in like a lot of violence and bad news happened. So they tried to import like, well, you should rather in the week you can have a glass of wine with your dinner, which kind of means that everybody drinks wine Monday through Friday and then gets shit-faced Friday, Saturday.
There was a city in Brazil that made last call, I think, like 8 p.m. they weren't allowed to serve booze, and it cut crime down more than half in the city.
Oh my god!
Like it's just like everything was just kind of like there was like they were just doing that to bring more tourism, and it, like they cut down the drinking. No, that's just fine now.
Well, even when you look at a culture like England or
it
like
totally
London,
totally works. I'll tell you, like it's a big deal. Like and also in they tried lowering the tax on alcohol in Finland. First weekend, like 150 people died, like drinking themselves.
Oh my god.
People in our part of the world, like that, you know, you drink. It's the part of the world where we drink the most coffee and kind of the most alcohol, and it's you know, it's because it's dark all the time. You need coffee to stay awake. Like, how are you going to go to work if it's pitch black 24 hours a day? You need to drink a lot of coffee, and then you drink a lot of booze because it's depressing and end up beating each other up. But so it really kind of is, you know, our part of the world has a really bad relationship to booze, I think.
I love that idea of trying to import cultural habits to be able to try to change. And
it's
then you
better.
But you see, you know, it's like, it's sort of that.
So sophisticated down there on the continent.
Sort of like how, like, water seeks a level that you know, every culture kind of has its perfect stasis. There's a perfect balance. And if you fuck with it in any way, like you said, of, like, lowering taxes, it's just, like, fuck, big pandemonium. Like, people just can't handle it no matter what. Where around the world have you been surprised where you went to a place and you found out, like, oh, my God, this is a really interesting – I never would have come here otherwise.
Unless music.
Yeah, exactly.
We were talking about this the other day. Somewhere that is great, but somewhere in the U.S. that is great, but you wouldn't get the idea of going there. I think Las Vegas is that way. I would never, like, get the idea to buy a ticket to go to Las Vegas. But the fact that I've been there and seen it is really fun.
Does Sweden have a Las Vegas, or do people go to, like, Ibiza or something? Or?
Yeah, there's a Las Vegas of sorts that are these cruise ships that go to Finland for 24 hours. And it's all... It used to be there was, like, a park in every... Like, a park or a venue-ish kind of thing called the Folkets Park in every city. But those got... they don't exist anymore, pretty much. And that's where you would go drink and meet your future wife and stuff. And now it's the cruise boat to Finland. So everybody gets on like a bus in the morning. You go to Stockholm, you get on a cruise boat to Finland. And the whole reason of those cruise boats is that you get out on international water. So booze is tax-free.
Oh.
People buy shitloads of beer and liquor and just get
hammered for 24 hours. Yeah. People are still hammered when they get off the boat.
And like go to the buffet
and have food. Bad sex.
That sounds like Vegas. Yeah
it is Vegas. On the water.
You mean I don't have to stop drinking? Well,
and it's also sort of like lawless because it's on international water. Yeah.
The way
but
you described it made it sound like you come back onto land really drunk and starting to get hungover, and then on a buffet, you just push someone over the buffet and have fuck them on the buffet.
What do you do at buffets?
It's probably happened.
Right into the fruit salad.
All you can eat.
And you have these gnarly, like, the cabins, like, where you stay on the boat. It's sometimes under the engine room and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's great. People just falling off the sides of the boat.
It can get rough on those. But also, that is the Vegas, because that's also where a lot of conferences are held and stuff. Like, if you work at an electronics company, you're like,
on a cruise.
Oh, we're going on a conference cruise.
Oh, right.
Which is like an excuse to have sex and drink, I guess. Well, but other than that, like, I don't think people would have babies in Sweden, so it's probably good that happens.
There's been sort of an unspoken movement. I think it was kind of with my generation where a lot of people either just decided to not really have kids or just wait until really late in life to have kids.
And then your kids are either damaged or you can't have any.
Right, you don't want to wait too long. But is, you know, in Sweden, is it still pretty family-oriented?
No, it's really... I mean, in the countries, like out in the country... The first child is probably around like 22 or something. Yeah. So it's still pretty like where it makes sense biologically. But in Stockholm, in parts of Stockholm, it's like 40 is the first baby.
Nice.
But so there's all kinds.
Yeah.
This band's pretty family oriented. Like there was a lot of early babies.
Oh, do you have kids?
I don't, but all the other guys have at least two.
Oh, each. Nice. Yeah. Back home, do you guys live? Actually still live in Sweden?
Yeah, we all live in Sweden. You know, and then we tour, and then we're not there that much, but we live in Sweden.
Nice. Well, we're at about, we've dominated enough of your time, and your guys' show is somewhat soon, but it was really nice sitting and chatting with you guys. I really appreciate you taking the time to...
Thank you. I'd love to do it again.
You're welcome to come back.
It's fun to talk to other people than the other four.
Even if we ask, even if we talk about the same things, like, just, it's coming out of different face holes.
You're actually, yeah, exactly. But you're actually asking other questions than, you know, it's not like...
What time is soundcheck? When is dinner?
Yeah. What's again, the Wi-Fi password? Yeah.
That is, yes.
Where's the beer?
Yeah.
Well, have a great show tonight.
What is the beer today?
Yeah.
What region yeah. are we in? Yeah. What's the microbrew?
Is it good?
That's what I do on tour.
That's yeah. Jonas. What's the best microbrew here?
Here in LA?
No, I mean, that's your question.
Oh, yeah, that's... Well, it's like, you know, sometimes when you're on tour, you'll get into a city and you're at the venue and you really have no time to experience anything the city has to give except for maybe what beer they have yeah. only there.
What is the best beer in LA, though?
Right now, it's probably...
Miller Lite?
What? Yeah, Miller Lite, probably Tecate. No, it's right now there's a brewery in, called Eagle Rock Brewery, and they have like really good...
Eagle Rod.
Eagle Rock.
Rock.
Eagle. Yeah, Eagle they're Rock good. Rock. And then there's a place nearby, a few miles north, called Russian River, and they have a really good beer called Pliny the Elder.
Okay.
Yeah, cool. If you can find it.
Well, it's really like a big deal that's happened in the States. Like, we used to go on tour and we'd all get headaches because the only beer you could get was Rolling Rock.
Oh, that's the worst.
We would rarely like either drink booze or stay sober all throughout the US tour or buy really expensive imported beer.
Right.
Which seemed pointless. And now it's like delicious every day.
Yeah, every city has like a ton of microbrews.
And they're all really good.
That's something I remember about the green bottle beers is that the something about the light hitting like that wavelength weirdly ferments the beer faster or something, and so like I think that's why if you drink a green bottle beer and it tastes weirdly skunky, it's because it was in a green bottle and it was left in the sunlight.
I hate
too long.
I hate Rolling Rock. I hate Heineken. Most green beers, green bottles. I do not like.
Well, we'd like to thank Heineken as this sponsor of the Nerdist podcast. No beer company's ever going to sponsor the podcast. True. You don't have to worry about that. We'll have a great show tonight, you guys.
Thank you.
It was.
Nice. You coming to check it out?
I actually have to do a show myself tonight. Across town.
I was supposed to be out of town. I didn't get tickets.
Aww.
Yeah, I know.
You're here in the fucking green room.
I'll just stay. I'm just going to stay here.
You know what you got to do is be like, okay, everybody, here we leave. Yeah. And then you just kind of just subtly hide behind the door.
No, so
I have some bum Swedish friends who are probably not coming anyway on the guest list. I can take them off and put you on.
Thank you.
We're
going
to give you a Swedish name like Bjorna.
Yeah, some IKEA. Yeah. Björn Vagnsnes.
All right. How do you say enjoy your burrito in Swedish?
Wouldn't really say it like that. We're not that pleasant.
Oh, okay. Then how would you say this is
ha
a burrito?
Ha en god burrito.
Ein god burrito?
Oh, ha en god burrito.
Ha en
but
god
it's weird. How do you say it? Hoppas burriton smakar gott.
Yeah, you say, I hope the burrito's gonna taste good. That's what you say. You don't say say enjoy the burrito. That's
Njut av burriton. That sounds vaguely sexual. Sexual.
It is. Kind of, you're gonna enjoy this burrito.
A little bit like that. Yeah.
I do kind of like the idea of like, I hope you enjoy this burrito.
Yeah. It's a little Japanese, very circumstantial.
May this burrito bring you many joys.
There's no guarantees. Yeah. It could be the worst burrito ever, but we hope that.
What's the best burrito in Los Angeles?
Oh, God, what is the best burrito in L.A.? What do you like?
The Flaming Taco Truck. Have you been there?
Yep.
It's the best.
That's great. It's the Flaming Taco Truck nearby is pretty good. Also,
is that nearby?
Are you talking about the one that's always on Wilshire? Or?
It's like at the gas station.
There's a few of those around the city.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, there's a Taco Zone on Glendale.
Taco Zone!
Alameda and Echo Park, the Taco Zone.
There was also a really cool place called, was it Cowboys and Turbans?
Yeah, Cowboys and Turbans.
There was like a Mexican-Indian mashup, so you'd get these like curry burritos that were really
good.
Like,
the truck is pretty good, too.
The Cody truck is good. That's
Korean
crossover.
Oh, yeah. Nice.
Fusion, they call it.
We're in Koreatown, so it's all
But also, right up Vine, Cactus Taqueria,
It's just like just a stand on Vine, like not too far away. And they got really good carne asada.
Or you could go down to Olivera Street downtown, like the really old, you know, early 1900s.
Yeah. Or you can throw a fucking rock. It's Los Angeles.
It'd be good.
That'd be decent. Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
All thank right, you.
Take care.
This one's called A Thousand Answers. Goes like this.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast was brought to you by Shutterstock.com. With over 700,000 high-quality video clips, Shutterstock helps you take your creative projects to the next level. For 30% off your new account, go to Shutterstock.com and use the offer code Nerdist11.
What came first, the chicken or the egg? Spoiler alert, it's neither. At Happy Egg, we believe happiness of the hens is what actually came first. Because without happy hens, there would be no such thing as happy eggs. You know, eggs with delicious orange yolks. Those come from hens who are raised the happy way on 8-plus acres of family-owned farms. Choose happy at happyegg.com and look for the yellow carton at a store near you.
Happy
Egg.